resulting in depression and anxiety and post-traumatic stress.
We are going to break now, but we're going to interview you for part two and post online at democracynow.org. Satsuki Ino was born in Tule Lake Segregation Center, a maximum security internment camp for Japanese Americans during World War II. That does it for our broadcast. Happy birthday to Karen Ranucci, Kasim Masood, and Ava Crosby Wallet. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us. Special thanks to Renee Feltz.
The time is 5 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Oregon Zoo Summer Concerts, presenting Greenski Bluegrass Saturday, June 29th. All ages welcome. Tickets and more information available online at zooconcerts.com. Coming up next is the evening news.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a morning news and public affairs director, as well as an evening news and public affairs director to manage the news and public affairs programming. For these two full-time positions, we're looking for people with proven experience in audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on four stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River, activities for kids, after-hour jams, fireworks, and more. Again, that's the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Robert Mueller has agreed to testify after being subpoenaed by the House Judiciary and House Intelligence Committees.
3 years ago, an oil train derailed in Mosier. We speak with the Dalles Air Coalition to find out what's changed since then.
And progressive members of the U.S. House of Representatives, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, refused to back the billion-dollar humanitarian bill for border facilities.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 26, 2019. I'm Leslie McLam.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. The Eugene City Council on Monday passed a legal clarification of an ordinance they hope will end houseless people's right to camp on the sidewalk. The Register Guard reports that councilors voted unanimously to allow trespass complaints against people who set up tents on strips of land between sidewalks and streets. The updated rule says adjacent property owners can request that people leave encampments on the planter strips. Police will be able to issue citations or make arrests for second-degree trespass against people who refuse to leave. Mayor Lucy Venice is expected to sign the clarification, which will put it into effect immediately.
A bill in the Oregon legislature would allow employees 12 paid weeks off from work to deal with family and medical situations. The Oregon News Service's Eric Tegetoff reports.
The Oregon Senate could help the state join seven other states with paid family and medical leave laws. The paid leave law that passed in the House last week would allow employees up to 12 weeks away from work in situations such as the birth of a child or to take care of a loved one with a serious medical condition. Currently, most workers can take up to 12 weeks off without pay under the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act. Andrea Peluso is head of Family Forward Oregon. She says the legislation will help people at all income levels.
We have structured the wage replacement so that folks who are earning the lowest amount of wages will get 100% of their wages when they're out on leave, not just a portion of that. So really wanting to make sure that not only does this program exist and in theory cover everyone, but it actually is accessible to everyone.
Peluso says it's important to make sure people with lower wage jobs have access to this program because they are least likely to have paid leave policies at work. Employers with fewer than 25 employees would be exempt from making contributions into the program. Opponents say it will make it harder to run a business in Oregon. Peluso says folks already are facing major life events, and this bill helps employers and employees deal with them.
Employees having children getting sick, having family members get sick, having our parents age and need our help, this is already happening to every one of us. And right now what we're doing is asking for the working families in our state and the employers in our state to operate in a system with no support.
Peluso says the bill has gained broad bipartisan support and is expected to pass this week, which was scheduled to be the last week of the session. However, the session could be extended after Republican senators took their own leave from the Capitol last week to avoid a vote on a climate bill. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Oregon Senator Peter Courtney announced the climate bill is dead, so the runaway Republican senators will get back to work, right? Pragmatically, Courtney can't kill the climate or any bill just on his own. Some Democratic senators care strongly about the bill. More importantly, the Republicans probably want other concessions, bills canceled or amended, before they return to provide a quorum. At this point, the Republicans haven't said what it will take to get them to return to Salem and their jobs. There are still many pending policy and budget bills to be voted on before the session, including funding for public education, forestry, public safety, and mental health support. Among the pending are bills that would improve protections for foster kids and school children, allow undocumented immigrants to get driver's licenses, and create a paid family medical leave program.
The Pembina Pipeline Corporation says they have lots of public support to build their liquefied natural gas export terminal in Coos Bay. The Associated Press reports that to build the Pacific Connector Pipeline, Pembina needs temporary construction easements, the width of a four-lane highway, and a permanent 50-foot right-of-way for the entire pipeline. The Canadian corporation says it has secured voluntary easement agreements with 82% of the landowners along the 229-mile route of the terminal's proposed feeder pipeline. Opponents say they've been tracking pipeline easements recorded in the counties along the pipeline route and that only 61% of the individual landowners have pipeline easements recorded with county authorities. The construction would impact 252 private landowners along the route, including 30 timber companies. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission officials are holding four public comment sessions in Southern Oregon this week on the environmental impact of the proposed project. The commission is expected to render its decision on the project early next year. The feeder pipeline for the Jordan Cove Export Terminal would run from an interstate gas hub in Klamath County to Coos Bay.
Rachel Najjar has helped families in the Columbia Gorge agitate for a cleaner environment through the Dalles Air Coalition, even though her own family is still dealing with the effects of pollution they were exposed to several years ago. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with her this week about what's new with the Cleaner Air Oregon program established by the State Department of Environmental Quality after the oil train explosion in Mosier in 2016.
I am with the Dalles Air Coalition. And we've been active for probably almost 4 years now. And we've been through a lot of bumps. And even though it might seem on the surface that nothing's happening with regulations and shutting down this active Superfund site that we are fighting underneath, I think that we've made huge developments, mostly just spreading awareness and making people start talking about what's going on in the gorge. And even though it's so beautiful, why are people so sick? And people are now asking the question, what's that smell? And is it hurting my health? So, you know, we give everything our best, and with DEQ, we really tried to put the pressure on them, but it just doesn't seem like that goes anywhere. And we'll see what happens with Clean Air Oregon, but really right now we're focusing on just spreading awareness and making sure that people who move to the Dalles know what they're getting into, the risk that they're putting themselves at, and the people in the Dalles getting them the right help, the medical care, because it's a lot of work to heal from that many chemicals poisoning your body. And just working together, I'm really trying to make the gorge come together as one. And I'm working with some healthcare providers right now to do some testing for chemicals throughout all the different places in the gorge, so we can see what chemicals are at different parts of the gorge. And I'm hoping that will become bigger than what we can even imagine, because I think we really need to get the word out.
Wait, back up a minute. Different chemicals in different parts of the gorge. Talk about that. Why would there be different chemicals in different places?
Yeah, there's different risks. I mean, it's just sort of like a state-by-state basis, but that even goes as far as to say town-by-town or city-by-city. So, you know, I started in the Dalles when I moved to the gorge, and there you have so many. There's 7 different Superfund sites there. So we have the aluminum plant that has reopened under a different name. There's the landfill there that has toxic waste. There's the barges that are coming through on the Columbia. There's the cherry growers that have their pesticides spewing. And there's the railroad that's coming through, and all different kinds of things associated with that. And that depends on what they're carrying. And then you come further up, and you have Mosier, who had the oil train derailment, which I'm sure has had lasting effects. And there's also lots of orchardists around that area. And that is another problem that's going on in Hood River, is the orchards and all the agriculture there. And just historically, the industry that's been here. So, you know, the problem is that nobody knows what we're being exposed to. And the healthcare providers that I've been working with to heal my family from living in the Dalles, I think what we've taught each other is that we really have to start questioning and looking deep into things, and not just assuming that even though it's pretty here, that it's safe, because we're seeing so much illness. You know, I keep hearing of people dying at young ages. I mean, even babies. And there was a girl, even she lived past white salmon on the Washington side. She was diagnosed with a rare form of brain cancer. And we're just hearing it way too often. And it's not their lifestyle, so it has to be something in the environment. And we don't know what that is exactly. So,
Rachel, talk a little bit about your family's health issues. And the last time I spoke to you was in 2016 after the Mosier train derailment. And that was a time in the city of Portland where people were fighting against state environmental regulators around the pollution from a couple of glass factories here, art glass factories. But when people began to understand the inaction of state environmental regulators all across the state, it was like lights going on everywhere. But talk a little bit about your family, if you could. What are some of the health problems that you're trying to heal from?
Yeah, I think the first thing to say is that we are a very healthy family. We were completely healthy before moving to the Dalles. And since then, there's been basically, I mean, every body system that you could think of has been affected in at least one of my family members, and our family has grown a lot since then. But there is one problem called hemolytic anemia, and that's really my biggest concern besides cancer and everything else. I mean, nobody should be put at risk, but hemolytic anemia is a result of a gene variation that can be found in people in African and Asian descent, or anybody really, but especially people from Africa and Asia or places where there's a lot of malaria. And the gene mutates and protects them from getting malaria again, but then it also doesn't allow them to be exposed to certain chemicals, and naphthalene is one of those chemicals, which is found in creosote and causes the odor, the mothball odor. And when you're exposed to high enough levels of naphthalene, it kills off your red blood cells and wreaks havoc on your body. So that was a problem that started happening in the Dalles and since then has gone away. But other things have happened, like the boils we got lasted for about a year after we had moved away from the Dalles. But finally, we don't have any of those. But we had some respiratory problems in my little one, and she's finally, like the past 6 months, just getting better. And I had some reproductive problems that I have worked really hard to work out, and that's improving. I had a baby when I lived in the Dalles, and she is now 3 years old. And she was very small when she was born. And I don't have small babies, and I breastfed her. And what I have found out over time with my research is that a lot of the chemicals that are in creosote are transferred through the breast milk. So, you know, even though I was doing good for my baby by breastfeeding her, I had no idea the harm that I was doing by transferring these high amounts of chemicals. So I'm working with some naturopaths now in Portland, because I've had another baby since, to talk about the dioxin in my breast milk and how I can ease the transfer to my newborn, which is really scary for me to think about, but it has to be addressed. And my three-year-old, she started growing once we left the Dalles. Finally, she was really tiny. And now she's had some developmental issues that my other kids didn't have, and so we're addressing those. And I started taking her to a chiropractor and doing some other different therapies, and she's improving exponentially. And it's just shocking to see what the difference is, just to help her with that little push of detoxing. And right now my seven-year-old is having some eczema that started around the time we were in the Dalles and went away, and it's caused all sorts of gut problems. And so I'm working with lots of different healthcare providers, working on detoxing and addressing each health issue as they come, which isn't easy, but you know, we just have to do it.
So when we first had you on the news in 2016, you were in the Dalles, you were organizing protests, you were helping people agitate against the state environmental regulators, which people in other parts of the state also were doing. Now it's been a few years. You've moved away from that area, but you're still active in helping educate people about the issues, and you have a very active social media presence. Rachel, if people are listening right now and they don't even know that there's people in the Dalles or people in the Gorge in those beautiful rural areas that are agitating against these incredible forms, all these Superfund sites and all the pollution, Rachel, who can people participate with? In your opinion, what should people do who literally realize after they've moved to this beautiful green area that it's dangerous for them?
That is a really big question. You know, for me, you know, I've heard that word accidental activist be thrown around a lot, and I really agree with that. I think, like, being really aware of your family's health and not just normalizing everything. And once you see a problem, really starting to ask questions and look around at the sources. And there's different groups in each town, I know. But also, I think that there's a lot of unknown, and we're all starting to figure this all out and realize why we all have these strange illnesses. So, you know, it might be something that you start on your own, or you just look around on Facebook, start making connections. But in the Dalles, in the whole Gorge, there's lots of environmental groups that are rising. But what I'd like to do is combine those together, and we fight for the whole Gorge as one, because there's so many problems. But you know, you take Union Pacific, who is basically taking over the gorge, and all the damage they've done to every single town, if we address that together and fight, maybe we would have better luck. But individually, it's a lot harder. But I think, you know, to really answer your question, I don't know that there's a group. I don't know the groups individually, and it's really hard. You know, I always try to make our group really welcoming because we need more fighters. But there's just, it's so deep, and we've gone into so many different layers of this. It's really hard for people to come in and understand the depth of it. You have to sort of peel the layers, and once you realize that your family's at risk, you want to run away, but where do you run away to? There's not a lot of safe places left on the planet anymore. But like in the Dalles, I say, I don't think that there's much worse than creosote, just because I've never been that sick in my life, and I know that I've been exposed to other chemicals before. But literally at this point in our life, we really can't tolerate chemicals at all. You know, we really had to eradicate any exposure to chemicals, and that's a really big challenge. But yeah, I mean, social media is a great place to link up with people.
A few years ago, when we had the oil train crash, that was such a wake-up call. It was just so stark. It was such a big deal. No one could ignore it. And now, since then, we've had all kinds of smaller spills and littler things. And the state, you know, they, like you said, they passed their new policy and created this new institution. But it's not. We even have fewer reporters covering this. Earlier this year, the Oregonian did an incredible investigative series, and they covered a lot of these issues around the oil trains and why the state environmental watchdog agencies were not doing their job. So more and more has been coming out this calendar year about people that literally were paid to watchdog these situations, and they admitted to reporters that they literally did not stop or even demand safety tests from some of the new oil trains coming through the gorge. So, I mean, as you said, there's so many layers of it. Rachel, for people who are listening now, who maybe want to reach out and connect with you, how would they do that?
I mean, the best way would be Facebook, I guess. I was using an alias name, and now I just have my name, Rachel Najjar. I do a lot of posting about the studies that have come out about different pollutants and what's going on in the world. The Dalles Air Coalition has a Facebook page that's really good to get involved in. And yeah, I'd say that's the best way. We have an email, which is thedallesaircoalition@gmail.com.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Newly elected Portland school board members Andrew Scott, Michelle DePass, and Ailey Lowry won't be sworn in till July 2nd, but they're already expressing their opinions on some upcoming issues. Last December, the board approved having police officers in high schools, but many students oppose the presence of armed law enforcement. DePass feels that kids of color are more likely to be harmed. Lowry wants more counselors instead, while Scott wants a mix of armed and unarmed officers. Portland Public Schools has said a $790 million bond would pay to rebuild or modernize three high schools and a middle school. But a $240 million overrun is expected, which may necessitate another bond. The three new board members say they feel listening and transparency are necessary to rebuild the public's trust in funding needed repairs.
The California State Assembly held its first hearing today to examine how educators can support more African American students and break down the school-to-prison pipeline. Suzanne Potter from the Public News Service has more.
The Assembly Select Committee on Ending What's Often Called the School-to-Prison Pipeline meets today. It will hear from the team behind a report on reclaiming the promise of racial equity for black males in California. Sociology professor Dr. Angela Williams is a member of the California Federation of Teachers task force on the subject. He says he'd like to see a state program to promote diversity among teachers and administrators.
Let's focus on not only attracting more African American men to the profession, let's develop and implement programs that intentionally help identify, recruit, develop, and retain black male educators and classified staff.
A UCLA study found that the ratio between white male students and teachers in California is 15 to 1. For black males, it's 54 to 1, 77 to 1 for Asian males, and 114 to 1 for Latino males. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives have passed a bill allocating $4.5 billion in humanitarian aid for the southern border crisis. The bill comes after conditions which migrant children were subject to at a Texas Border Patrol station were exposed, along with increasing numbers of migrant deaths. Several progressive House members, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, refused to back the bill after expressing concerns about the funds being controlled by agencies enforcing Trump's zero-tolerance policy that led to migrant children being separated from their families in the first place. In a statement from the dissenting Democrats, the group wrote, quote, "It is absolutely unconscionable to even consider giving one more dollar to support this president's deportation force that openly commits human rights abuses." The bill is now headed to the Republican-controlled Senate. On Wednesday, the Senate approved a similar border and bill that would need to be reconciled with the House bill before being sent to Donald Trump. The White House has said that Trump would veto the House version of the bill if it landed on his desk in the current form.
On Tuesday, NBC News reported that employees of a Boston-based online furniture company, Wayfair, are upset at the company's continued decision to supply furniture to migrant detention centers amid the national outcry against the treatment of detainees in those centers. Workers for the company have formed a group called Wayfair Walkout, which demands that the, quote, "furniture giant cease all current and future business with contractors operating detention centers and establish an ethics code that empowers employees to act in accordance with Wayfair's core values," end quote. A letter by employees to upper management cited the company's slogan, which states, quote, "At Wayfair, we believe that everyone should live in a home that they love," end quote. It also mentions a recently fulfilled order for bedroom furniture for $200,000 being sent to a facility in Texas that is operated by the nonprofit government contractor BCFS, which manages the detention camps for migrant children. The letter, signed by 547 employees, was sent to company leadership last week, according to the NBC report.
Contract negotiations have stalled between the United Food and Commercial Workers Union in Southern and Central California and several major supermarket chains. KNX 1070 Radio reported on Monday that the stalled contract negotiations with Albertsons, Pavilions, Ralphs, and Vaughn's will impact 46,000 union workers. United Food and Commercial Workers Union, also known as UFCW, had said on Monday that the union members would be voting within the next 2 days on whether or not to give the authorization to union leaders to call a strike. They did vote, and they voted yes, as of today. If union members vote to approve the strike, this would allow the union to call a strike when it needs to, but it will not mean that a strike will definitely happen. Although the strike in 2003 and 2004 caused the grocery industry to lose around $1.5 billion in revenue, the impact of a similar strike could be lessened by the introduction of food delivery and personal shopping services. This time around, consumers may not know about or would even be able to avoid the hassle of the grocery store employee picket lines if they choose to order product delivery through companies which employ gig workers, such as Instacart or Shipt.
A bill proposed to Congress earlier this morning would require tech companies to submit to government audits to prove that their content removal and suggestion is, quote, politically neutral. The bill would amend the Communications Decency Act of 1996, which has recently come under fire from both Republicans and Democrats. Section 230 of the CDA provides immunity from liability to Internet service providers when users post libelous or illegal content. Groups as diverse as the Electronic Frontier Foundation, an advocate for free expression online, and the Koch-funded Americans for Prosperity group have come out against the proposed amendment, arguing that such governmental oversight would serve to limit free expression on the Internet.
Two U.S. senators presented legislation this week targeting data collection in the tech industry. Their proposed bill aims at creating regulations like those recently passed in California, where users will be able to opt out of future data sales and request that companies delete their personal data. If passed, the legislation would require commercial services with more than 100 million active users to disclose the net worth and nature of data they are collecting to both individual consumers and to financial regulators. There is no comprehensive national law governing data collection in the United States, though many European countries have adopted similar measures regarding user privacy and corporate transparency.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo. At 6, it's The Underground, then at 7, Hard Knock Radio with Davey D. Tonight's weather is a 60% chance of showers, possible thunderstorms, and a low of 56 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be a 70% chance of showers, possible afternoon thunderstorms, and a high of 66 degrees. Today in history, in 1971, the U.S. Justice Department issued a warrant for the arrest of Daniel Ellsberg, accusing him of leaking the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times. The quote of the day is from another whistleblower, Chelsea Manning, whose profession Brainy Quotes lists as criminal. "I believe that when the public lacks even the most fundamental access to what its governments and militaries are doing in their names, then they cease to be involved in the act of citizenship."
Robert Mueller has agreed to testify after being subpoenaed by the House Judiciary and House Intelligence Committees.